You are listening to Grandpa Lempsheets on RadioArian.com.
Another week's gone by, haters still hating, clowns are still honking, believers are still believing, though, and we're right here at the Church of the Lampshade once again. I'm really glad you could join us this week, folks. I hope we have a fun show, hope we have an informative and uplifting show, as always, as we talk about the things on our mind. And of course, we'll have our sermon this week, as it's the highlight of the Church of the Lampshade show. Installment number 21, believe it or not, 21 installments so far already of this show. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the three supporters I've got this past week. As always, really appreciate it. And if you want to be a part of that, and I would encourage you to do so, because we're the humble church here. There's no jet airplanes and mega churches and new Cadillac Escalades here at the Church of the Lampshade. We just scratch by with what we can. So I really highly would encourage you to do so. That information is at the bottom of this page. I'm not going to sit here and read it all off because you wouldn't get it anyway. So it's down at the bottom. We've got snail mail. We've got Bitcoin. We've got just about any kind of cryptocurrency you want. Let me know. I'll get you an address if you're doing something else like Ethereum or Litecoin or whatever. Email GrandpaLampshade1@gmail.com. And if you do support, I encourage you, if you want to, you know, have something you want to have read on the show, just mark it as okay so that I know it's all right with you to do that, and we'll do that. If not, as always, we highly guard people's anonymity here, so that's up to you. That's entirely in your hands. The listener's in control. So, but if you'd like to do that, I think it'd be kind of a neat thing to incorporate. I'm trying to incorporate into the show, so I'd encourage you to do so. But once again, I do appreciate those who see fit to support what we're doing here, to find it worthwhile. It means a lot to me, more than I can express. I usually try to reach out to y'all as I can, you know, to personally thank you. And it's beyond the financial support. It's just knowing that, you know, that y'all have got my back, and I try to have y'all's as well. As always, at the Church of the Lampshade, we have a pre-sermon discussion where we talk about the topics on our mind this week. And of course, this past week was the July 4th America celebration. America strongest ever. As they sit there, we're you know, singing over this, not a corpse, really. It's like this body on life support, and people are standing around celebrating, you know, it's their best days are ahead. And you're sitting, you know, people that are grounded in reality are looking at this body on life support, and it's apparently brain dead, you know, but the family's in complete denial, and they're around singing about, don't worry, he's gonna get over this, it'll get some dirt and rub it off, you know, it's gonna be okay, her best days are ahead of her. And people in reality are sitting there shaking their heads like, yeah, no. And it's not like I'm thrilled with the situation, don't get me wrong, but it's just when I see these people singing the national anthem and jets flying over and fireworks going off, and I'm sitting there like, who the hell are y'all kidding? I mean, really, it's the trajectory of things is at the point now, the level of willful denial involved is breathtaking, but it seems that most people are willing to partake of it. I mean, what do we celebrate with these people that are out there, you know, with their parades? And I mean, what are we celebrating exactly? America? I mean, even the people out there claiming to be celebrating, they're not celebrating the same stuff. We just finished with the Gay Pride Month, where we had constant parades of degeneracy and rainbow flags, and then we followed up with America, yeah. I mean, you can't pretend, you kids, this isn't in a vacuum. I mean, the July 4th celebrations aren't happening in a vacuum. You can't pretend like last month didn't exist. We can't, you know, so what are we celebrating? We're supposed to be celebrating. I mean, a lot of these people out there waving their flags, what? Well, I'm celebrating our troops and the sacrifices that I made for my freedoms. Your freedoms. Your freedoms to dress your kid up and say, my son is now a girl. Or to pretend that your seven-year-old tomboy daughter, she's a man now. She's a boy. She identifies as male. Back in the day, we called that being a tomboy. But now, no, you're going to have to, start trying to twist her around and tell her she's actually male when she's female. You got the freedom for that. Woo! Yeah. I celebrate troops, Grandpa Lampshade, and the sacrifices they made for our freedoms. So our troops that have gone overseas to fight for someone else's wars, because last time I checked, I don't see them defending the borders of America. Exactly what are we celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that your gender is whatever you decide it is? Are we celebrating the fact that the usurious debt system is teetering on the brink of imploding? That our government is technically beyond the point of no return? Remember when we used to have the fantasy that we were going to pay off the national debt? You remember those days? It's probably been about 20 years since anybody partook in that fantasy. Now we just pretend we just don't give a shit. You know, back 20 years ago in the 90s, it's like, look at this national debt. We're going to have to start paying this national debt off. Now no one even talks about that because the truth is, no, everybody knows it's not going to happen. But if it's not going to happen, then what? We just pretend it doesn't exist? I guess we just pretend that it's never going to implode? But you got your freedom. You get freedom. You can bitch about these crazy liberals. You can talk about how all these conservatives, they're just like a bunch of Nazis or something. You can complain about that. Don't complain. don't complain about the Jews though. That's not allowed. You'll be shut down. You can sit there and play the roundy round game of finger pointing. But the fact is, we're all just dancing around the hospital bed while the body's on life support. One of my favorite analogies to make here recently is the fact that the car has already gone over the cliff. You know, we're in the car. The car's gone over the cliff. A lot of people out there act like, we've got to find a way to turn this thing around. My humble belief. And I'm not being a black pillar here. I'm not trying to agitate you in any sort of way. But my humble opinion, it's too late for that. I mean, several years ago, maybe, if somebody had listened. I mean, it's not like we haven't had opportunities over the years as a nation to listen. I'm talking going way back. We had people warn us. Pat Buchanan tried to warn us. He was run out, basically. Ross Perot tried to warn us. He's a crazy old kook. And we just kept marching along down the road. Things continue to spiral. In the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever, the dissident right, we've tried to warn everybody. Nobody listened. We were told we were evil haters that wanted bad things to happen. You didn't want this to happen. No, we're warning you that this is going to happen if we don't figure out some sort of way to logically stop and take some different. All that time's all gone. We're at the point now. The car's over the cliff. I don't think there's any point in arguing over fighting over the wheel of the car and we somebody get on the brakes. We're over the cliff, folks. Don't be blackpilled about it. We'll sing songs on the way down. We don't know how far the fall is. We're mostly just waiting for it to hit the bottom and see who crawls out of the wreckage. We'll see who crawls out of the wreckage after it smashes into the bottom. Pretty much everything we've warned about is coming to pass. It amazes me that so many people don't see the pattern, even though, we have a reference, we have a reference point. Social media, Twitter, Facebook, they purged the dissident, right? And at the time we said, look, they're purging the Nazis now. Y'all are going to be next. Oh, no, no, we're not going to be next. And now they're all purged. Yeah, now the conservatives are being purged for, like, basic shit-tier normie posting, you know, bitching about the immigration. You're out. It's not like conservatives are now, like, posting hardcore memes of La Happy Merchant or something like that. I mean, it's normie tier stuff, but it's still it's a critical of the Marxist left. So that's not allowed. It's not allowed. So it's clamped down on, and ultimately these people get booted. It cracks me because they show up on Gab, you know, and they show up on Gab and they're like, "Well, I'm here. I just got banned from Twitter. I just got banned from Facebook because I was pointing out about the Muslims." You know, like, it's this big breathtaking accomplishment. It's like, yeah, well, you know, welcome to us, what, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, whatever. But they don't see the pattern. Don't see the pattern. When events like Charlottesville happened and the dissident right, you know, clashed with the Antifa left, you know, we're sitting there telling the normie cons, you know, it's just like the social media stuff, you know, y'all's turn is coming.
Oh, no, they won't. It's just y'all are all a bunch of fanatics. In fact, y'all are really no different.
Oh, God, I still see that floating around on Gab. You know, they can't, for some reason, these people have this inability to call, like, Antifa what they are. I mean, they're Marxists. They're communists. They walk around with the communist flag. It's not like they're hiding it. You know, I mean, they're not. I mean, they're communists. They're Marxists. They wave the hammer and sickle flag and do all of that. And what do you see these people on Gab posting?
He's Antifa fascist.
No, they're literally anti-fascist. That's what Antifa stands for.
They're the real Nazis.
It doesn't even make any sense. Is it that hard to say they're commies? Is it that hard to say they're Marxists? I don't understand the need to sit here and try to define them as something other than what they are. Was communist not bad enough? You just got to come up with something real bad. I'll call them Nazis. Doesn't even make any sense because it's not, I mean, it's not what they are. They're literally communists. That's what they say they are. I agree with them. They're communists. Why is it so hard for normicons to say they're communists? No, they're fascists. They're the real fascists. They're the real Nazis. And now what are they doing? This past week or so, they show up in Portland, and really there's no dissident right to attack. So they find some old man walking down the street, beat him with a pipe. Well, he's probably a Nazi. And normicons sitting here outraged. My gosh, what do they do? Well, they're doing what we told you they were gonna do. I mean, it's not like there's not a pattern here to look at and figure out. And yet, they'll wind up in denial.
Because we've got the freedoms. America.
As long as the Marxist left doesn't like you, if the Marxist left doesn't like you because you point out clown world for what it is, then you get doxxed. You're going to lose your job. You know, you lose your way to support your family or make a living. Or if you're a younger person, go to school. They'll find a way to get you kicked out of college.
They won't do that to other folks. They're just going to do that to the Nazis.
Well, you know, this past week, they doxxed an 8-year-old. I believe she's eight or 10 years old. There's this girl and she does they call her mini AOC, and she does these Ocasio-Cortez imitations. I've seen like one of the videos. It's normie tier shit. I mean, it's not like it's hardcore. It's just a kid playing around. She kind of looks like Cortez, you know, and she does her hair, puts the glasses on and puts the lipstick on, and whatever moronic thing that the media is running around celebrating, telling us we're supposed to take seriously, that AOC has done in the past week or so, she does like a skit of it. It's harmless normie tier shit. And her parents had to pull her YouTube channel because she got doxxed. They doxxed a little kid, and the family's receiving death threats. Oh, but they're only going to do this to the quote-unquote Nazis. Don't worry. They're down to doing this to little kids. A kid.
Yeah, when I read about that happening, it did. It really pissed me the hell off. I'm not going to lie. It really did. It made me mad because I've been through this, as y'all well know. And it's a very stressful thing. I'm not going to lie. Sit here and tell you it's a fun experience. But to think about a little kid going through this, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we're grown people. And when things like this happen, we deal with it. We move on. We figure out how to adjust and how to adapt and move forward. But a kid? And some of you might say, well, Grandpa, she ain't white. I don't give a shit. She's not a white. Hell with them. You're missing the point. I'm sorry, but you're missing the point. Just a kid. They're down to doing this to kids now. And normicons are running around like, well, they won't do this to me. I'm just a conservative. How many times do you have to see the pattern to not figure it out? I mean, at what point does it become undeniable? But let's celebrate America some more. Let's talk about our freedoms some more. And some people are like, of this frame of mind, they're going back to the analogy of the car is already over the cliff. Then there's people on the other extreme, like we're riding the car down, and people are under the extreme that like they're going to make the car hit the bottom faster. We can somehow make this thing crash quicker, because the quicker we hit the bottom, the better it's going to be. The better it's going to be. It's right up there with, you know, people that watch a plane crash, you know, and they're like, well, if I'm ever in that situation, right before it hits the bottom, I'm going to jump up. And that way, it won't hit the bottom. Look, folks, it doesn't work that way. When a car is over the cliff, you're just on for the ride. I mean, there's certain things you could do. You'd be putting your seatbelt on and trying to get in a position to where maybe you won't take as much damage. But the idea that you somehow, as a individual person, are going to take control of it and force it to hit sooner or later or whatever, is just silly. It's such a big thing, I guess is what I want to say. It's such a big thing that the momentum is going in such a direction that you're not going to affect it one way or the other. The outcome is going to be the outcome. The best thing you could do is just, I guess, I don't know if you could really take comfort in the fact that you at least know what's coming, but perhaps you can be as prepared for it as possible. But you're not really going to be able to force it to happen sooner or later. I mean, this is why the Bible tells us there's a time for everything. There's a season for everything. These things are going to come about in their own time. And to try to force it sooner or later or put it off or make it happen quick, you're wasting your time. Be prepared for it. Know it's coming so that you're not taken by a complete surprise, which most people will be, by the way, as things crash to the bottom. I don't know. And people ask me, you know, well, what do you mean? What's it going to look like? I don't know. It would just be guesswork. I mean, it is. I don't know how this plays out. Going by history, there will probably be some little insignificant. It could be a huge event happens that no one expected. One of the things that could be a trigger is the government actually going full retard and starting a big war that they have no, you know, that they lose right away, I don't know. History tells us, looking at history, oftentimes there's something that when you look at it by itself, in hindsight, it looks like this almost little insignificant thing that somehow snowballed and got out of hand and out of control and turned into this huge thing. But by itself, you're like, how in the hell did that become the trigger? But there's just a lot of stuff building up to it. But the point is that these things are, it's almost fate, if you would. They're going to happen. I don't think you can cause that. You know, when you realize this, people sometimes will jump to this idea that they can cause the triggering event. And I don't think it works that way. It has to happen organically. It will happen organically. You're going to force it to happen. It's just, it's going to happen. And then, what does it look like as it snowballs out of control? Again, I don't know. I really don't. I wish I could sit here. I don't have a crystal ball. I can sit here and look at history and look at where we're at now and see the momentum as far as it's going. And I could take wild guesses. But in the end, that's all they are. They're just guesses. As far as time frame, I would say less than 10 years, maybe 10 years at the most before it's just the crumbling is to the point that people aren't able to deny it anymore. Which makes it kind of, you know, I'll see people will say, well, we need this to happen before white people are more of a minority, in America. Well, if it's within 10 years, which is my best guess, then what? I mean, you're going to have a bunch of white kids and you're going to make your 3-year-olds fight? I mean, you know, when you look at the demographics, you sit there and go, well, okay, we're still technically majority. No, you're not, because you can discount the boomers. And I'm not, that's not even boomer bashing. It's just to say they're too old. You could discount. Once you discount the old people, you're already a minority. And for the most part, you can. You could discount the old people. They're just not going to. And they're not, and a lot of times they may not just be capable of going through a tumultuous time. I mean, it is. Older people, regardless of generation, wouldn't matter if they weren't the boomers. Older people are always going to cling to the status quo because they need that stability, because they know they don't have that many years left. That's just human nature. So you could discount the old people, the boomers. You discount. Once you do that, you're already a minority. That ship's done sailed, my friends. So having some sort of notion, I mean, really, if, you know, 10 years would be my guess. I mean, if I'm wrong, what do you think? Really, look at things around. Look at the crumbling order we're having. It's just crazy. The violence in the streets is getting worse and worse. Everybody dances around with the charade, you know, the team MAGA people, you know, that when Obama was in office, they were like, well, ain't no way we believe these unemployment statistics. Now Trump's in office, their team, for most people, their political stuff, it could be relegated to the point of sports ball team cheering. You know, it's my team. You know, they watch their sports ball team, and when the call goes against their team, it's like, oh damn referees, they're a bunch of idiots, they couldn't call nothing. And when the call goes for their team, it's like, hey, y'all just got to follow the rules. We got to respect the rules of the game. That's the way the game is played. That's how it is. But Obama was in office, we don't believe these unemployment statistics. Now Trump's in office, ha, MAGA baby. Unemployment is at a record low. Well, I've been unemployed for basically 5 months, unless you want to count this show. If I've been unemployed for 5 months, and guess what? I don't count. How many other people are out there in the same boat? Maybe obviously not the exact same situations around it, but they're not in the boat. They're not counted. They don't fit into the statistics. The statistics are bullshit. They're all dancing around with the economy's doing better than ever before. That's why people are so desperate. That's why you see people doing more and more crazy, desperate shit, because the economy's doing so well. It's all a charade. Everybody just pretending. Thing, you know, things are great. It's simple denial. You think this charade can continue for 50 more years? I don't. My guess is 10 years, maybe 5, might be 15 at the most. That's hard to imagine, because look how much worse things keep getting. The leftist, one of the things like the D team tries to, I think with the leftist, the Marxist media and everything, they're constant just drip, 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 drip about Trump. They're hoping like the people will get so sick of hearing them bitch and whine about it that maybe everybody will vote for Team D just so they'll hopefully like shut up about it. You know, like maybe if we just go ahead and let the Democrats win, they'll shut the hell up. You know, but of course they won't, but I don't know. It's just, again, watching everybody celebrate America. It's just, it just requires a level of denial of reality. There's like 25 people, I think, now running to be president on the Democrat ticket. It's laughable. They had their debate, and it's like they asked, you know, who up here on the stage running for the Democrat presidential ticket believes we should give free health care to all these people flooding across our borders? And every one of them raises their hand. I don't know if you're, because obviously it's easy for me to criticize, but if I was a leftist and I'm sitting here watching this, I would be like, wait a minute, I want free health care. I want free health care. What do you mean you want to give free health care to everybody pouring across the border? Wait a minute. I've been supporting you for years as a good leftist, and I can't get free health care. What do you mean we ought to give free health care to all of these people pouring across the border? It's just like they're trying to one-up themselves or something. It's more clown world. It's more insanity. But yet everybody dances around celebrating America, pretending like it's something that it maybe once was, maybe never was. We sail carrier groups around America. It's like we're trying to pretend it's World War II still. We're trying to pretend, you know, that it's we're getting ready to, I don't know, storm the beaches of Normandy or some shit. Meanwhile, we've been in Afghanistan for how long? Again, I'm not trying to be like Debbie Downer here or something, you know. People say, Grandpa, I don't know how you do this weekend. Well, sometimes I don't either, but the fact of the matter is all I simply do is look at things. I simply look at things and try to see the truth. That's it. I'm not celebrating that things are getting shitty. I do laugh about it because that's all you can do. Like I said, you're in the car, it's on its way down. Let's sing songs on the way down. I mean, there's no sense in sitting here screaming, we're all gonna die. I mean, yeah, let's find some laughs or something. I mean, maybe, you know, we don't know how it all turns out. I laugh about it. I try to point out the funny things. That's all you can do. I mean, you're so limited in what you can do as an individual person. And that's, you do what you can. Yeah, it's like this show. You know, I sit there and say, well, you know, the focus of this show is to shore up support and try to encourage, hold together whatever extent we can, the remnant of Christianity. Now, somebody might say, well, how's that going to save our Western civilization, our white Western civilization? How's that going to? It's not. It's not. I'm not under the illusions that somehow single-handedly doing this show, I'm going to turn it all around. I don't have those delusions of grandeur. I do, however, believe that real Christianity is one of the pillars that has supported our societies, our nations, our civilizations for hundreds of years. I do. I believe that. So in doing this, I'm doing what I can. It's not. No, it'd be silly to think that, oh, this is going to say, no, I don't have those delusions of grandeur. But this is what I can do. It's that little thing that I can do that's constructive that I can do. No, it's not enough by itself, but it's what I can do. So that's my contribution. I'm not thrilled that things are spiraling. I'm not thrilled that the car is over the cliff. I mean, just because I'm pointing out the car is going over the cliff and we're just going to wait to see who crawls out of the wreckage at the bottom. That doesn't mean I'm happy about it. Doesn't mean I wanted this to happen or I'm just looking around at the truth as I see it, and I'm pointing it out. But that's never popular. It's never been popular. Truth tellers are never received. When they're bringing unpleasant truths, they're never received. People aren't like, yeah, well, we're glad you came along and warned us about that. It's not the way it works. They get accused of wanting it to happen. Truth tellers get, you just hate, you hate your country, you just hate this, you hate that, you want, you know, I think of the ancient prophets when they would be like, you know, look, if y'all don't knock your shit off,
you're going to get handed over to, you know, this invading nation. And they're like, you're siding with the invaders. No, I'm telling you, I'm just saying that this is the direction it's going. The system is so corrupt that you're going to implode on yourself, and then a foreign army is going to march in here and take your shit over.
He's siding with the enemy.
No, because that's the way it always works. Truth tellers are never welcomed. I mean, there'll be some that'll hear it and be like, yeah, this guy's right. I mean, it's not a pleasant thing to hear, but this guy's right. In hindsight, if there's a record of their truth telling, people will look back and go, man, why didn't they listen to those guys? Because they were telling them. But at the time, people don't want to hear. What people want to hear is somebody that's going to tell them everything's great. You're doing the right thing. That's why there's huge mega churches and the pastors ride around in a new Cadillac Escalade and tell the people that show up at the mega church that they really need to donate more because, yeah, I've got one private jet, but it's just kind of ghetto. I need me a new private jet. And they do it. I mean, yeah, they're probably getting money from outside sources and things such as that. So they shill for Israel and stuff like that. But yeah, I would speculate that does happen. But still, I mean, they're getting a significant amount of money because they're filling. They got all these people showing up to the mega church. Meanwhile, at the Church of the Lampshade, we have three people support this week. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. We're this remnant, you know. We're this remnant, and truth-telling is not going to be, because people aren't big on that. People aren't big on hearing unpleasant truths. People want to hear somebody tell them they're great, everything's going to keep going great, your life's going to keep getting better, society's going to keep... America's best days are still in front of her. Even though now, she's nothing more than a body laying there, on life support. Let's get on in here, folks, and fill the pews. We've got sermon this week as we talk in our more Christian focus. The whole show is Christian focus, but we get down to the heart of the matter to our sermon this week in the Church of the Lampshade. Get in here, fill those pews. I'll put my crazy old West preacher frock coat on, covered in dust, like I just wandered in from the desert, half crazy. Get on in here, fill the pews. We go ahead and get to the heart of our Christian message this week here in the Church of the Lampshade. And as you get settled in, I just thought we'd make one last remark on that. Sitting here thinking as I was getting prepared for this week's sermon. And I brought up the national debt, and people sit here and sometimes say, well, if the government can't pay back this money, then why do they keep loaning it to them? Why is the Federal Reserve, which is not federal, is not a part of government. It is a creation. It is the big banks. I mean, the big banks are the Federal Reserve. It's not the government. And people say, well, why they want to get paid back? Why would they loan money to the government that they know they're not going to get paid back? Because the money doesn't exist. When I hear people make remarks about something like, you know, they're just running the printing presses. No, they're not. They're just entering numbers into a computer. Literally, that's all it is. It's nothing. It's numbers on a computer. Oh, the government needs to borrow another $1 trillion? No problem. There. Okay. At this much percent interest. Yes, I know. I'm oversimplifying it. Here's the thing. Why would they then? What's the point? Because they know it can't be paid back. The plan for the big banks is that when the government inevitably, when it collapses and the government inevitably defaults, they're going to demand the assets. That's what they want. And you sit here and say, well, what do you mean? No, literally, look at all these national parks. Look at the ports. All of these hard assets that the government actually owns. They claim ownership of it. That's what they want. I mean, think about it. If you could enter digits on a computer and for your investment in 10 years, you know, someone gives you a car. Yeah, I mean, you'd be like, yeah, that's a good deal. I mean, I basically just put some numbers in a computer. Now I get the assets is what they want. And then if they claim enough of the hard assets, guess what? They own everything. The citizens are all debt slaves. They can't raise a ruckus. They've got to make that next payment. They've got to keep their heads down. They got to keep those bills paid. They got to make it to that next check when they have just enough money to buy just enough food, and the rest goes to the banker. Pay that note, pay that debt. Hell, half the time they're paying debts, they don't even remember what they borrowed the damn money for. Doesn't matter. Got to pay it. And you have these people that are so brainwashed, they'll say, that's right, you got to pay your debts. It's... you got to pay your debts. You want to be a deadbeat? It's a game. You'll literally be slaves. Well, you'll be slaves in everything but name. But you'll be slaves to the big corporations and the big banks. They own everything now, even the land, probably even the house you live, everything. They own the media. They own the land you live on. They own all the government property. They own everything. The government then is reduced to being the same role as the citizen. The government's a debt slave. They just tried somehow, you know, okay, well, we gave them all these assets and that marked down this much. So now we can borrow more money. So we can go fight another war for Israel in the Middle East. Yay, America, sing the national anthem. Is something I thought I would throw in there. Understand, they don't care about, they know they're not going to get paid back. They're not really risking anything. They're after the assets. I don't think it'll work, by the way. I think this arrogant plan will backfire. At some point, everybody realizes that default's not the end of the world. You know, piss on you. I'm not giving you the hard assets. What do you... And then, you know, I think, because there's so many other things. I mean, that's one aspect. But the societal order is breaking down to the point. You would have to have a really rigid, orderly society to go along with, well, we hand these assets over. It's the right thing to do. The society is collapsing. The social order is collapsing to the point. I don't think that plan's going to happen. I know that's their plan. I believe 100% that's part of the plan. But I don't think that'll happen. I don't think that will be successful because the societal order is breaking down to the point that, I mean, it's just breaking down to the point as somebody that's been around a while. I mean, I can't believe it's this bad. I can't believe that everybody's at each other's throats to the point that they are. But the order is it's breaking down, and there's no sign, there's no reason it would stop or it would turn around. So I don't think it'll work out. But that's one of the angles. Anyway, just thought I would throw that in there. Let's get on into our Christian message this week. This is the highlight of the show. It's why we do the show. And if you want to get ready, let's see. This week, I think for our scripture reading, we're going to do Matthew 24. I'm going to skip down and start at verse 3. I'll set up the background. The disciples, Jesus made this remark about, you know, everything crumbling down. All the buildings and stuff, they're marveling at the architecture. And, you know, he's like, you know, this isn't going to last. And so the end of times, the times of Christ's return is in the minds. It's in the minds of the disciples. So, you know, they wait till they're alone to bring this up. You know, it's like Jesus had his times when he would, you know, be talking to the multitudes. But then when it came to like a lot of deep subjects where you had to take some detail, you know, this would be a private conversation with the disciples. So we'll start at verse 3, chapter 24 in the book of Matthew. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? Well, people have always felt like they live in the end times. And it's not necessarily incorrect because, again, we live in linear time and God lives in the realm of eternity. So when you talk about days, the end days, we tend to think of it literally as days, but it's actually a span of lots of years. The end of days is a large span of time. Where do you mark that at? Again, we have this limited view as we walk in this world. I believe when we've seen this explosion of technology, one of the things I find marvelous is the fact that, you know, mankind has been on the planet for a long time. I mean, you could debate how long, but a long time. And you look at the end, say, in 1800s. You look at the mid-1800s, we'll go right in the middle of the century, the mid-1800s, how were men, what was the primary mode of travel? Horseback. Well, yeah, they had trains, you know, yeah, there were certain developments there. But for the most part, the primary mode of transportation was still horseback, which was what? The primary mode of transportation for hundreds, if not thousands of years. You ride horses. Mid-1800s, ride horses. So you have all of this time, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and the main primary mode of transportation is the same. Nothing's changed. I mean, yes, there's developments. Things are being developed. But then you take 100 years from the mid-1800s to the mid-1900s, say 1970. Now, your primary mode of transportation is what? Automobile. You can get in your car and cover more ground in an hour or two than you could ever carry, go a whole day on horseback. People are capable of getting on a plane and being on the other side of the country in a matter of hours. What, did mankind suddenly get smarter? I mean, you think about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and yes, there was this pattern of gradual development. There was things came up with, like, for instance, like I say, they had trains, you know, which was better than, you know, you could get it from over here to over here faster than horseback. But I mean, come on, it was kind of impractical. I mean, you had to go where the railroad was. I mean, you couldn't pick where you wanted to go. But a mere 100 years later, all of a sudden you can get on a jet airplane, be on the other side of the country the same day. Well, people didn't magically get smarter. Mid-1800s, the most lethal weapons developed were still basically guns. I mean, the Civil War wasn't even fought primarily with cartridge weapons. They were still having to pour the powder in and put the ball and tamp it down. I mean, that was your primary weaponry. And now what? We've got weapons that can wipe out an entire city in one go. In 100 years? Really less than 100 years. I find this curious, and I don't think that's organic. If I had to pick, what would you call the beginning of the end of days? That's where I would put it, at where you look at the beginning of this acceleration of technology, of ability. I'm not a technological naysayer. I'm not sitting here going, we should somehow go back to riding horses. There's no going back. Time only goes one direction. There's no going back. But if I had to pinpoint when, you know, what sets now, because like I said, everybody's always thought, you know, when a war broke out in the 1700s, I guarantee you there were people like, this is it. This is the end of days. Look at these. They got these muskets. And you know what makes now different? And this is what I think, looking back, makes now different. You look at the technological aspect that came out of nowhere. And again, it's the same people. People were smart. You look at how people wrote letters in the 1700s with these pens and their grammar. Don't tell me people were dumber back then when you look around at idiocracy today. Don't tell me people in the 1700s were dumber than they are today. That's bullshit. But yet, in such a sudden, you have this burst of advancement. I think this is a sign of this indeed being the end of days. My personal opinion. Okay, so the disciples are asking Jesus, what are going to be the signs of your coming and the end of the world? Let's pick up on verse 4 here. And Jesus answered them and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. I want to stop there for a minute, because you may look at this and go, "What? I haven't really seen anybody going around claiming to be Jesus. So how is this necessary? I mean, sure, I guess there's probably been cult leaders who essentially claimed that they were Christ on some level or another. But other than that, I don't see people going around. I don't see a bunch of people going around claiming to be Jesus. But hold on. Who did Jesus say he was? the way, the truth, and the life. Anybody claiming to be those three things is claiming to be Christ. I mean, they may not go around and say, hey, I'm Jesus, come to the world. No, they're probably not going to do that. But if you look of it in the definition of way, truth, and life, look at us. Look at us now. Lies, we're told that lies are the truth now. Yeah, we're told so much of our religion now. I mean, we're told that the way is whatever you decide it is. As long as you say the magic chant that you believe in Jesus, the way is whatever you pick it is. You see, these other things, these false ideologies, these false teachings, and even these false prophets themselves, when you get down to it, they are claiming to be the way, the truth, and the life. And in such, they are claiming to be Christ. So it's not necessarily a case of somebody showing up and announcing to the world, I'm Jesus. You know, you don't have that in your head. Because it's not necessarily what he's talking about here. Let's continue. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Now, one could argue that there's always been wars and rumors of wars, and that's true. That's true. I mean, but at the same time, I mean, as we look through fairly recent history, and we look at things now. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, the looming war thing was the Cold War, Soviet Union, the Soviet Onion, as I like to call it. And you know, but for the most part, the country itself didn't stay in a constant state of war. We were jumping around worrying about the Soviet boogeyman that wanted to take our freedoms away. I mean, imagine if the Soviet Union had somehow conquered us. They would probably make us celebrate degeneracy and tell our kids to chop their dicks off. But well, then again, maybe not. But I mean, I look at this, just the constant state now. I mean, since 9/11, I mean, America's like in this constant. We're in this constant state of war. The latest boogeyman is Iran. I mean, it's just a constant state of some level of war, threat of war. We're still in Afghanistan. We're over here. We're over there. We're ginning up going over here. What about Russia? What about China? We got to threaten these people over here. It's on a global scale versus wars of the past being so much, you know, if you go before World War One. That's why it's called World War. At the time, after World War One, they called it the Great War because they thought, well, we'll never do this again. Little did they know. But before that, so wars were more regional. I mean, you could go somewhere on the planet and escape the reach of the war, but it expanded to the point where that wasn't necessarily the case. So, yeah, wars beforehand were more regional. Now it's like it's just constant state of war. And again, I think this is again illustrated perhaps here in our own current times. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. It's the beginning. It gets worse. Yeah. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And his name is what? Who he is. When the Bible talks about the Lord's name, the name of the Lord, he's talking about the name is used in this context to be who he is. Who he is. And who is Jesus? Well, for lack of better, what he said he was, the way, the truth, and the life. The center point word here, the truth. So Jesus, truth, you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. You see, I don't think it necessarily requires going around talking about Jesus. It's definitely part of it. This is because it stirs up the spiritual level, the devil himself, Satan's realm. But for the sake of the truth, because that's the central word Christ used to describe himself. You're going to be hated for speaking the truth. Sounds pretty Sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? I don't see him saying you're going to get a new car, a jet airplane, and a megachurch for my name's sake. No, because truth doesn't play that well. This is what he's saying. This is what's coming. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And there's a lot of hate in this world now, isn't there? It gets projected on us all the time. And there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with hating what is wicked. There's nothing wrong with hating what is evil. But the level of society, I mean, this boiling undercurrent is just something that, again, it's something I haven't seen in my lifetime. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. I don't think I need to comment on that. It speaks for itself. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. I really want to bear down on that for a minute. I think this is something we should hone in on here. Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Love has waxed cold in our societies. If we look at our societies as a whole, the love, it's just everybody's at each other's throats. But let's bear down on a particular example, as we look at our society. Let's look at the basic love between a man and a woman. You know, a husband and a wife, this love that it's been like the foundation of stable societies throughout time. And what do we have now? Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. You sit there and stare at Pornhub or whatever, these 6 million porn sites. You could stare at these and just suck all of the iniquity in. And the love of many waxes cold. Sex in our society. You talk about when people come out and younger people come out and say, I'm saving myself for marriage. They're ridiculed in our society, aren't they? Nobody, come on, no. Nobody does that. Nobody saves theirself for marriage. It's the societal norm, the societal expectation that a young woman, if she hasn't already started screwing around in high school, when she goes to college, it's her official initiation to spend at least 4 years riding the carousel. Got experience life, right? And their love waxes cold. You're supposed to go out and bang as many sluts as you can, right? That's what makes you a man. Go bang as many of these whores as you can. And you know. And the love of many waxes cold. You can't do these things. You know, people talk about pornography, for instance. And there's these scientific studies that it actually screws your brain up. And yeah, it makes your love wax cold. You cheapen these things to the point. It's just something you do. It's like a drug you take or something. As a society, we have destroyed that meaning, that love bond that is there. They destroyed it, and the love of many waxes cold. You look at these bitter feminists that are now, 40 years old, and now all of a sudden they're in their late 30s, their 40s. They've spent their beauty years. They've pissed those away riding the carousel. They've had who knows how many different partners, to the point that love doesn't even factor into it. It's just this cold, calculated thing. And then all of a sudden they realize, oh, shit, you know, my
You know, my ability to maybe have kids or something is gone out the window. Now they're running around. Now they're angry and they're bitter. You see these people and they're angry and they're bitter because their love is waxed cold. They can't go back. They can't go back and reel that in. They've already pissed it away. They missed out. And of course they're angry. They've missed out on this part, this central part of meaning of life. For what? Remember that show, what was it, Sex in the City? You know, and it's like they treated it, they really pushed this idea that sex, or for women, sex should be nothing like, just like for men. It's just this thing you choose to do to keep yourself, because it feels good to you. And it doesn't have to mean anything. It doesn't have to mean you're seeking a relationship or any kind of understanding. Their love waxes cold because iniquity abounds. You got every sort of degeneracy promoted, every sort of pornography promoted, all of this iniquity. But you see, it eats away at the love. It eats away. It cheapens these things down to the point that your love just waxes cold. It just people become almost just inanimate objects, you know? For a young man, your sex partners, after a while, your sex partners might as well be like a robot doll. You talk about the sex bots, you know, it's a sex bot revolution, you know. What would really be different? Because people's love has waxed cold. What if you came out with realistic sex bots? Then what would be different? Because right now, the only difference is your sex bots have a pulse. There's no love involved here. It's just something you do. Same thing. Young women, that are just out here riding the carousel, all these different partners, because they're told that's what they're supposed to do. They're told this brings meaning to their lives. What are their sex partners? They're just a dildo with a body attached for no... Another classic example of sermons you will not hear in modern cuck church. That's what people have been reduced to. Why? Because their love has waxed cold, because iniquity is abounding. Again, this is such an obvious sign of the times that we live in. We're at verse 13. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. Endure to the end. It's a race. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Endure to the end, he that doesn't give up. I've said before that one of the things you have to understand as you walk your journey with Christ and with the Lord is you're not expected. Well, the great thing about Christ's sacrifice, of course, that you're saved, is the knowledge that you're saved with the knowledge going forward that as you continue to try to get closer to him, to walk the path he gives you, you're going to screw up and you have that freedom to do so. You're going to screw up. I've said it oftentimes. I'll say it again here. One of the big mistakes new Christians make is they'll hit this moment and it's like, I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. No, my life feels different. And they get black-pilled because after a couple of weeks, a couple of months or whatever, they start slipping back into those old habits and they feel like, wait a minute, I thought Jesus was going to change my life, but I'm starting to slip into the same thing. And they get tricked into feeling as though they're not really saved. Not really saved. If I was really saved, then how come I find myself falling back into the same bad habits? You have to understand it's a process. You work towards it. You endure it to the end. Always understand that as long as you are striving to be closer to God, to know him, to try to get closer to him, which means trying to live your life in a more godly way, he's not giving up on you. You're not more determined to reach him than he is to reach you. He will always love you more. He will always be reaching for you. You do not love God more than he loves you. If you are seeking him, he will be there for you. He will not leave your faith just in vain. So you have to endure it. You have to continually strive and know and be confident
that your sins are forgiven. Again, this isn't, we talked about this last week in particular, this isn't a green light to just, you know, go live in sin on purpose and not bother trying to be closer to God, because that's not truly accepting Christ as your Lord and Savior. He that endureth to the end shall be saved. It doesn't give up. Even though this world continues to be corrupt, even though the society collapses around us, the love of mankind is now waxed cold, flooded with every sort of degeneracy. Who doesn't give up? Who tries to pull themselves out of this societal muck, the societal, the disgusting degeneracy of society, who continues to strive for better? Not the person who's magically saved at one moment, because it doesn't work like that. But he that endureth to the end shall be saved. We're going to skip forward to verse 42. I know we're skipping forward quite a bit here, but we're going to run out of time. And I want to get this last part in, because I think this part is important as well. We're still in chapter 24, the book of Matthew. We're going to skip forward, however, to verse 42. And continuing, this is Christ continuing to speak. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is the servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. And this is the final part I wanted to stress here. Because there are some people that have, and this is again, people that believe in the rapture concept and whatnot. There are people in the modern church in particular, and thus as an extension, we get accused of this, that have this attitude that, well, Christ is coming, so I just got to wait for Jesus. I'm just waiting for Jesus, because Jesus going to take care of all this. Now, yes, it is true that, look, as bad as things may get, know that in the end, Christ is returning. He's promised he is. And that victory is ours. I mean, we are going to see that. But it is incorrect to have the attitude that all we got to do is wait for Jesus. Blessed is the servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Again, watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Why is this relevant? It's relevant because Jesus is warning you that you better be doing what you're supposed to be doing. Jesus is not going to be pleased to come back and you're sitting around and he's like, what are you doing? You're sitting around here while, you know, the house is being destroyed. You're sitting around here and you're like, I was waiting for you to come because you're going to take care of it all for me. No, the master will be pleased and he sees the servant. Just imagine this. You've got somebody that works for you, since we don't technically have servants anymore. You have somebody that works for you. They've worked for you. You put them in charge and you're going to be gone. And their job is to watch your house. That's it. They got one job. Watch the house. Keep the house safe. Now, about the time you come back, you come around the corner and you see smoke. And it's like, oh, shit, my house is on fire. And you roll up there. Now, you get two scenarios here. Let's say you roll up there. And in scenario one, the servant's got the garden hose out there and he's spraying and the house is engulfed. And this fool is out here spraying with a garden hose, like, you know, grabbing a shovel and throwing dirt, trying to put the fire out. But the house is in flames. And you're like, hold on. I got the firewood. You're just going to put this flames out. I got the fire department coming. Yeah. Are you going to be mad at that servant? No, you mean your first instinct is going to be, yeah, this guy was still to the very end spraying his garden hose on a hopeless cause. You know? Yeah, it's a hopeless cause. The house is engulfed in flames now. I mean, what's he going to do with a shovel and some dirt and a garden hose? But he's still trying. Even though it is futile, he's trying to do his duty. He's trying to save your house. You're going to be mad at the guy. You're going to be mad at the guy and be like, you idiot, slap him around. You didn't put the fire out with your garden hose. No, you're going to be like, this guy... He's a loyal guy. I mean, this guy, to the very end, when it was hopeless, he was still trying to do what he could do. Now, scenario two, you're rolling up there. You see the smoke. You roll up there. Where's your employer? Your employer is sitting out there. Your servant's out there. He's got him a lawn chair sitting up. He's got like empty beer cans all around him. He's drinking a cold beer, roasting hot dogs on the fire of your house. And you're like, what the hell is going on? The house is on fire. What are you doing? And he looks at you and he's like, dude, look at it. Oh, thing's burning up. I can't do nothing with that. What, I got a garden hose over here? What, you want me to spray with a garden hose? I ain't going to do no good anyway. I figured at some point you'd see the smoke and you'd show up. Maybe you'd put the fire out. I mean, that's up to you. Your house, not my house. How are you going to feel about that? I mean, sure, yeah. I mean, he has a point in the sense that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to put the fire out with the garden hose. But this asshole's sitting there drinking beer and doing nothing. He's just watching the house burn. And you put him in charge to take care of the house. Now, you're going to be mad. You're going to be seriously pissed. You're going to be here. He's going to be like, hey, what? I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. No, you're sitting here. It is unscriptural to have this notion, this attitude that, hey, it's a hopeless cause. We'll wait for Jesus to come. He's going to take care of it. No, yeah, we do. We have the confidence that ultimately Christ is going to return and bring victory. The ultimate victory will not be the devil's. You may die before the ultimate victory happens. You look at soldiers in a war, you know? Look at soldiers in a war, and the nation ultimately wins. But this guy, 6 months before the war ended, he got a bullet in his head. He got blowed up by a bomb or a grenade or whatever, and that soldier died. Yeah, the nation still won the war. And ultimately, you could say the victory belonged to that soldier, but he was dead. I mean, he wasn't around to see it. Yeah, victory is coming for you, for Christ, in Christ. You may not be around to see it. You may die in the cause before that happens. But you still have to do your part. You are still burdened with your responsibility as a soldier for the Lord, as a servant of God, to do the duties that you have set before you. Even if it seems pointless. Even if it seems hopeless. Yes, you have the confidence of ultimate victory through Christ. But I don't mean that the soldiers don't have to bother showing up on the battlefield. You're going to want Christ. If he returns while you're still on this earth, you better be doing what you're supposed to be doing. Your part. No matter how small it is, he's not expecting you to do more than what you're capable of. But you need to be doing something. If you come back and you're just sitting around like, wait for Jesus to come take it. And I see that. It's a hallmark, a really big hallmark in the modern church of, well, I don't really have to do anything, worry about anything. I'm just waiting for Jesus to come back. In fact, I don't even have to wait for Jesus to come back because the rapture is going to happen and the angel is going to show up. And before things get really bad, I ain't even going to be here. You can have my car. He said, in case of rapture, you can have the car because I ain't going to be here. Don't have to do, it's a deception. It's a false doctrine. You don't have to do nothing. Just wait for the rapture. You don't even have to be here. You get an audience seat for Christ's return. And if you miss the rapture, it's okay because Jesus still comes save you. And you just wait. You don't have to do nothing. Just wait. You'd be driving, doing nothing. And then Christ's going to come back and take care of it. He's going to fix it all. It's a false doctrine. The scripture warns us time and again. Do what you're supposed to be doing. The work that he has given you to do. Even if it seems pointless, he who endureth to the end shall be saved. There's no doubt. We live in troubling times. I mean, look around. I mean, you don't even have to be a Christian believer to understand we live in troubling times. We live in troubling times. That's a fact. But as Christian believers, we're warned. We're foretold about these troubling times. I mean, should we really be shocked? Somebody tells you, hey, you know, there's going to be severe thunderstorms in the morning. You get up in the morning and there's thunder and lightning and rain's pouring down. But, oh my gosh, why are we having severe thunderstorms? You were told last night, severe thunderstorms in the morning. No, you're not surprised. You get your umbrella out and you plan ahead. You had your slicker, your raincoat, your umbrella out. And you had to go outside and do some things. So you got your rubber boots. You had all that ready because you understood there's going to be thunderstorms. In the morning, we're warned about these troubling times. I'm not sitting here trying to sugarcoat it. I don't like it either. Nobody gets to choose what time they're born into. You don't get to pick. You don't get to pick what times you're born into. You get what you get. And they're troubling times we're born into. No doubt about that. But don't get discouraged. Christ does not expect you to single-handedly fix the troubling times. He doesn't. He knows you're not capable of it. Don't think more of yourself than you should. He doesn't expect you to turn the world around. Single-handedly turn the world around and fix it. Doesn't expect you to do that. But what he does expect you to do is your part. What he does expect you to do is the duty that he has assigned for you to do. Even if it's futile, doesn't matter. If you're told to do A, B, and C, it doesn't matter if when you look at it, it's like, there's no point in this. It doesn't matter. Your master has told you to do those things. The outcome of it's irrelevant. You're supposed to do those things. The outcome's up to him. He shows up and the outcome looks bad. He said, I don't know what to tell you, Lord. I did what you told me to do. That's your responsibility. That's the end of it. You're not in charge of the outcome. You're in charge of the duty that he has given you and the responsibility to endure to the end. Folks, we got to wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoyed this week's Christian message as well as our little visit beforehand. And as always, thank you to those who support what we're trying to do, our efforts moving forward. In our work here, I do appreciate it. Appreciate your prayers and continuing support on every level. Folks, we're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you enjoyed this week's show. You know, we'll be back next week. You know where to find us right here on Radio Arian for the Church of the Lampshade show.
照らして